Chapter 2. Surface in geometrical oppressiveness from top to bottom. The roof was of blue slate, clean as a table, and unbroken from gable to gable. The windows were glazed with sheets of plate glass, a temporary iron stovepipe passing out near one of these, and running up to the height of the ridge, where it was finished by a covering like a parachute. Walking round to the end, he perceived an oblong white stone let into the wall just above the plinth, on which was inscribed in deep letters, "Erected 187, at the sole expense of John Power, Esq. M. P." The new Sabbath still proceeded line by line, with all the emotional swells and cadences that had of old characterized the tune. And the body of vocal harmony that it evoked implied a large congregation within, to whom it was plainly as familiar as it had been to churchgoers of a past generation. With a whimsical sense of regret at the secession of his once favorite heir, Somerset moved away, and would have quite withdrawn from the field, had he not at that moment observed two young men with pitchers of water coming up from a stream hard by, and hastening with their burdens into the chapel vestry by a side door. Almost as soon as they had entered, they emerged again with empty pitchers, and proceeded to the stream, to fill them as before, an operation which they repeated several times. Somerset went forward to the stream, and waited till the young men came out again. "You are carrying in a great deal of water," apostrophe he said, as each dipped his pitcher. One of the young men modestly replied, "Yes. We filled the cistern this morning, but it leaks, and requires a few pitcherfuls more." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Why do you do it?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "There is to be a baptism, sir." Apostrophe apostrophe, Somerset was not sufficiently interested to develop a further conversation, and observing them in silence till they had again vanished into the building, he went on his way. Reaching the brow of the hill, he stopped and looked back. The chapel was still in view, and the shades of night having deepened, the lights shone from the windows, yet more brightly than before. A few steps further would hide them and the edifice, and all that belonged to it from his sight, possibly forever. There was something in the thought which led him to linger. The chapel had neither beauty, quaintness, nor congeniality to recommend it. The dissimilitude between the new utilitarianism of the place, and the scenes of venerable Gothic art which had occupied its daylight hours could not well be exceeded. But Somerset, as has been said, was an instrument of no narrow gamut. He had a key for other touches than the purely aesthetic, even on such an excursion as this. His mind was arrested by the intense and busy energy which must needs belong to an assembly that required such a glare of light to do its religion by. In the heaving of that tune there was an earnestness which made him thoughtful, and the shine of those windows he had characterized as ugly reminded him of the shining of the good deed in a naughty world. The chapel and its shabby plot of ground, from which the herbage was all trodden away by busy feet, had a living human interest, that the numerous minsters and churches knee-deep in fresh green grass, visited by him during the foregoing week, had often lacked. Moreover, there was going to be a baptism. That meant the immersion of a grown-up person, and he had been told that Baptists were serious people, and that the scene was most impressive. What manner of man would it be who on an ordinary plodding and bustling evening of the 19th century could single himself out as one different from the rest of the inhabitants, banish all shyness, and come forward to undergo such a trying ceremony? Who was he that had pondered, gone into solitudes, wrestled with himself, worked up his courage and said, "I will do this, though few else will, for I believe it to be my duty"? Whether on account of these thoughts, or from the circumstance that he had been alone amongst the tombs all day without communion with his kind, he could not tell in after years when he had good reason to think of the subject, but so it was that Somerset went back, and again stood under the chapel wall. Instead of entering, he passed round to where the stove chimney came through the bricks, and holding on to the iron stay, he put his toes on the plinth, and looked in at the window. The building was quite full of people belonging to that vast majority of society who are denied the art of articulating their higher emotions, and crave dumbly for a few golden respectably dressed working people, whose faces and forms were worn, and contorted by years of dreary toil. On a platform at the end of the chapel, a haggard man of more than middle age, with gray whiskers ascetically cut back from the fore part of his face so far as to be almost banished from the countenance, stood reading a chapter. Between the minister and the congregation was an open space, and in the floor of this was sunk a tank full of water, which just made its surface visible above the blackness of its depths, by reflecting the lights overhead. Somerset endeavored to discover which one among the assemblage was to be the subject of the ceremony. But nobody appeared there who was at all out of the region of commonplace. The people were all quiet and settled, yet he could discern on their faces something more than attention, though it was less than excitement. Perhaps it was expectation. And as if to bear out his surmise, he heard at that moment the noise of wheels behind him. His gaze into the lighted chapel made what had been an evening scene when he looked away from the landscape night itself on looking back, but he could see enough to discover that a brougham had driven up to the side door used by the young water bearers, and that a lady in white and black half mourning was in the act of alighting, followed by what appeared to be a waiting woman carrying wraps. They entered the vestry room of the chapel, and the door was shut. The service went on, as before, till at a certain moment the door between vestry and chapel was opened, when a woman came out clothed in an ample robe of flowing white, which descended to her feet. Somerset was unfortunate in his position. He could not see her face, but her gait suggested at once that she was the lady who had arrived just before. She was rather tall than otherwise, and the contour of her head and shoulders denoted a girl in the heyday of youth and activity. His imagination, stimulated by this beginning, set about filling in the meager outline with most attractive details. She stood upon the brink of the pool, and the minister descended the steps at its edge till the soles of his shoes were moistened with the water. He turned to the young candidate, but she did not follow him. Instead of doing so, she remained rigid as a stone. He stretched out his hand, but she still showed reluctance, till, with some embarrassment, he went back and spoke softly in her ear. She approached the edge, looked into the water, and turned away shaking her head. Somerset could for the first time see her face. Though humanly imperfect, as is every face we see, it was one which made him think that the best in womankind no less than the best in psalm tunes had gone over to the dissenters. He had certainly seen nobody so interesting in his tour hitherto. She was about 20 or 21, perhaps 23, for years have a way of stealing marches even upon beauty's anointed. The total dissimilarity between the expression of her lineaments and that of the countenances around her was not a little surprising, and was productive of hypotheses without measure as to how she came there. She was, in fact, emphatically a modern type of maidenhood, and she looked ultra-modern by reason of her environment. A presumably sophisticated being among the simple ones, not wickedly so, but one who knew life fairly well for her age. Her hair, of good English brown, neither light nor dark, was abundant to abundant for convenience in tying, as it seemed, and it threw off the lamplight in a hazy luster. And though it could not be said of her features that this or that was flawless, the nameless charm of them altogether was only another instance of how beautiful a woman can be as a whole without attaining in any one detail to the lines marked out as absolutely correct. The spirit and the life were there, and material shapes could be disregarded. Whatever moral characteristics this might be the surface of, enough was shown to assure Somerset that as he had some experience of things far removed from her present circumscribed horizon, and could live, and was even at that moment living, a clandestine, stealthy inner life which had very little to do with her outward one. the repression of nearly every external sign of that distress under which Somerset knew, by a sudden intuitive sympathy, that she was laboring, added strength to these convictions. And you refuse? ... said the astonished minister, as she still stood immovable on the brink of the pool. He persuasively took her sleeve between his finger and thumb, as if to draw her, but she resented this by a quick movement of displeasure, and he released her, seeing that he had gone too far. But, my dear lady, he said, you promised. Consider your profession, and that you stand in the eyes of the whole church as an exemplar of your faith. I cannot do it. But your father's memory, miss. His last dying request. I cannot help it. She said, turning to get away. You came here with the intention to fulfill the word? But I was mistaken. Then why did you come? She tacitly implied that to be a question she did not care to answer. Please say no more to me, she murmured, and hastened to withdraw. During this unexpected dialogue, which had reached Somerset's ears through the open windows, that young man's feelings had flown hither and thither between minister and lady in a most capricious manner. It had seemed at one moment a rather uncivil thing of her, charming as she was, to give the minister and the water-bearers so much trouble for nothing. The next, it seemed like reviving the ancient cruelties of the ducking stool to try to force a girl into that dark water, if as he had not a mind to it. But the minister was not without insight, and he had seen that it would be useless to say more. The crestfallen old man had to turn round upon the congregation and declare officially that the baptism was postponed. She passed through the door into the vestry. During the exciting moments of her recusancy, there had been a perceptible flutter among the sensitive members of the congregation, nervous dissenters seeming to be at one with nervous Episcopalians in this at least, that they heartily disliked a scene during service. Calm was restored to their minds by the minister starting a rather long hymn in minims and semi-breves, amid the singing of which he ascended the pulpit. His face had a severe, and even denunciatory look as he gave out his text, and Somerset began to understand that this meant mischief to the young person who had caused the hitch. In the third chapter of Revelation, and the 15th and following verses, you will find these words. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. So then because thou art lukewarm, and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Thou sayest, I am rich, and increased with goods, and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched, and miserable, and poor, and blind, and naked. The sermon straightway began, and it was soon apparent that the commentary was to be no less forcible than the text. It was also apparent that the words were, virtually, not directed forward in the line in which they were uttered, but through the chink of the vestry door, that had stood slightly ajar since the exit of the young lady. The listeners appeared to feel this no less than Somerset did, for their eyes, one and all, became fixed upon that vestry door, as if they would almost push it open by the force of their gazing. The preacher's heart was full and bitter. No book or note was wanted by him. Never was spontaneity more absolute than here. It was no timid reproof of the ornamental kind, but a direct denunciation, all the more vigorous perhaps from the limitation of mind and language under which the speaker labored. Yet, fool that he had been made by the candidate, there was nothing acrid in his attack. Genuine flashes of rhetorical fire were occasionally struck by that plain and simple man, who knew what straightforward conduct was, and who did not know the illimitable caprice of a woman's mind. At this moment there was not in the whole chapel a person whose imagination was not centered on what was invisibly taking place within the vestry. The thunder of the minister's eloquence echoed, of course, through the weak sister's cavern of retreat no less than round the public assembly. what she was doing inside there, whether listening contritely or haughtily hastening to put on her things and get away from the chapel, and all it contained was obviously the thought of each member. What changes were tracing themselves upon that lovely face? Did it rise to phases of Raphaelesque resignation or sink so low as to flush and frown, was Somerset's inquiry, and a half-explanation occurred when, during the discourse, the door which had been ajar was gently pushed to. Looking on as a stranger, it seemed to him more than probable that this young woman's power of persistence in her unexpected repugnance to the right was strengthened by wealth and position of some sort, and was not the unassisted gift of nature. The manner of her arrival, and her dignified bearing before the assembly, strengthened the belief. A woman who did not feel something extraneous to her mental self to fall back upon would be so far overawed by the people and the crisis as not to retain sufficient resolution for a change of mind. The sermon ended, the minister wiped his steaming face and turned down his cuffs, and nods and sagacious glances went round. Yet many, even of those who had presumably passed the same ordeal with credit, exhibited gentler judgment than the preachers on a tergiversation, of which they had probably recognized some germ in their own bosoms, when in the lady's situation. For Somerset there was but one scene. The imagined scene of the girl herself as she sat alone in the vestry. The fervent congregation rose to sing again, and then Somerset heard a slight noise on his left hand which caused him to turn his head. The brougham, which had retired into the field to wait, was back again at the door. The subject of his rumination came out from the chapel not in her mystic robe of white, but dressed in ordinary fashionable costume, followed, as before, by the attendant with other articles of clothing on her arm, including the white gown. Somerset fancied that the younger woman was drying her eyes with her handkerchief, but there was Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.